Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Matthew Ade, a leading intelligence historian expert on the NSA and a regular commentator on intelligence matters for the New York Times, the Financial Times, the National Journal, the Associated Press, CBS News, and many other outlets. He is the author of Intel Wars, The Secret History of the Fight Against Terror, and The Secret Sentry, The Definitive History of the National Security Agency. He has an article at Foreign Policy with William Burr, Secret Cold War Documents Reveal NSA Spied on Senators. Welcome to Background Briefing, Matthew Ade.
Thank you very much.
And, of course, this is a bombshell, the idea that the NSA was spying on the Democratic Senator Frank Church and Howard Baker, a very prominent Republican from Tennessee, neither of which were anti-war critics. And this was, of course, happening during the Vietnam War and particularly with the anti-war protests. So what's your sense of, first of all, this was authorized by Nixon, right?
Well, we don't know. To be honest, there are about $1,064,000 questions to this story, which the NSA history, which we used, doesn't answer. The first is, when Senators Church and Baker and the five other prominent Americans mentioned in this NSA history were when their phones started getting tapped, who authorized the National Security Agency to monitor their communications? What information was derived from those taps? And perhaps most importantly, what use was made of the material? And you have to remember that this program, which was called Minaret, ran for 6 years from the summer of 1967 to the summer of 1973. So at any point during that six-year period, these two senators were tapped. We just don't know when, why, how, all the particulars.
And, of course, this program was begun under Lyndon Johnson, who set it up in 1967 and continued by President Richard Nixon, his successor. So perhaps I asked the wrong word, authorized or targeted. I mean, in other words, it feels that the names on this list are people that the White House or somebody, I don't believe the NSA and the intelligence services operate entirely on their own. You've got Martin Luther King, of course, one of the more prominent figures. We've known about that, Whitney Young, Muhammad Ali, and the Washington Post humorist Art Buchwald. We know that Nixon was particularly irritated by Art Buchwald. It's not a huge stretch to assume that Nixon had some input in this list.
Your listeners probably should understand that regardless of whatever their political affiliation may be, both presidents, Johnson and Nixon, both men were paranoid in the sense that both believed that the events that were shaping the United States and the world around them, which were for the most part negative, meaning the United States, the opposition to the war during this six-year time period grew dramatically to encompass the entire nation. There were marches in Washington, and the race riots, which began literally on the day that Martin Luther King was assassinated in Memphis in 1968, literally shook the nation. And both men, Presidents Johnson and Nixon, believed that these activities, the anti-war protests and the race riots, had to have been instigated from outside the United States. They just could not understand why millions of decent, honest, hardworking Americans would, of their own volition, get up and do this sort of thing. And so it had to have been Moscow or Beijing or Hanoi or, one of those bad guys from overseas that had to have been starting all this and funding it and directing it from abroad. It's all part of the great conspiracy theory. Now, we Americans love our conspiracy theory. The problem is that President Johnson and Nixon had command of the U.S. intelligence community, and you asked the right question: who directed that the seven prominent Americans, including two U.S. senators, be targeted for, you know, intercept by the National Security Agency? The answer is we don't know. And you're absolutely right. NSA does not operate independently. Someone forwarded these names to NSA headquarters at Fort Meade outside Washington. NSA just did not, you know, some NSA analysts just didn't wake up one day and say, hey, why don't we tap Martin Luther King's phone?
Again, I'm speaking with Matthew Ade, a leading intelligence historian, expert on the NSA, and a regular commentator on intelligence matters. He is the author of Intel Wars, The Secret History of the Fight Against Terror and the Secret Sentry, The Definitive History of the National Security Agency. He has an article at Foreign Policy with William Burr, Secret Cold War Documents Reveal NSA Spied on Senators. Now, in total, some 1,650 individuals were tracked by the NSA between 1967 and 1973. That's what the information that you've had declassified under this NSA program called Minaret. But my understanding is that most of the identities of these people still remain unknown.
In fact, the vast majority remain unknown. It's this is the first time this particular document, which the National Security Archive got declassified, it's the first time I've ever seen in an NSA document the names of some of the Americans who NSA, the agency, was monitoring during, you know, at the height of the Vietnam War.
So obviously this has tremendous relevance to today, and of course the FISA court that authorizes the NSA's spying through Section 215 of the Patriot Act have authorized this metadata collection on all Americans, which has created quite a stir. And we had a very close vote in the Congress that the NSA just squeaked by to continue this program. Ironically, we're talking about the period prior to the formation of the FISA court that was set up in response to a lot of these revelations that came out in the Church Committee hearings. And of course, one of the people, the senators that were targeted by the NSA at the behest of both probably Presidents Johnson and Nixon was Democratic Senator Frank Church, whose very committee is the one that created the FISA court in the first place. So,
well, the irony there is that Senator Church, whose committee revealed the existence of Operation Minaret in 1975, probably had no idea that he was one of the targets of the very operation that he helped expose. So, you know, if he was still alive today, Senator Church died a number of years ago, but I think he would have been mortified today if he knew that that NSA had put him on its watch list.
But how do you see it echoing with today's revelations from Edward Snowden? I can't help feeling that there is a thread here, shall we say.
There is. I mean, the thread is that we're dealing with somewhat analogous situations. I'm not picking on the National Security Agency, you know, per se, but rather the way we deal with intelligence issues here in the United States, as a general rule, which is that, you know, these agencies, there are now 17 agencies which comprise the U.S. intelligence community today. Their budget is approximately $50 billion. They have vast authority to tap phones, intercept emails, open mail, you know, dig into, you know, every aspect of your life if and when they, you know, they are authorized to do so. But, you know, the problem is that this is all done in secret. And, you know, these agencies have massive authority to go where they please and do what they want. And, you know, the agencies respond that, well, we have checks and balances in place and there's lots and lots of oversight, all of which is true. It's true today as it was 40 years ago when Operation Minaret was working. There were fewer checks and balances and virtually no oversight. But, my take on this is that, you know, Operation Minaret could not have existed without high-level approval by somebody in the White House.
Well, isn't that
the oversight? There was no oversight because the program was kept deliberately secret from those bodies that had the responsibility for it.
Well, this is one of the great ironies of our rather ludicrous public debate about intelligence, where most people who are appalled at what the CIA has been accused of around the world, and we eventually find out that these accusations are largely true, they, of course, see the CIA as this rogue organization that does terrible things in the name of the American people. But they forget the fact that the CIA is told to do these things by American presidents. That when even presidents like Jack Kennedy, who vowed after the Bay of Pigs to smash the CIA into 1,000 pieces, he turned around and used them zealously to try and kill Castro. And Lyndon Johnson always believed that Castro decided to kill Kennedy in response to the fact that Kennedy was trying to kill him. Not an entirely implausible theory. Now, you have this amazing escape clause in American history, and you're an historian, that nobody holds the presidents accountable for what they tell these agencies to do. They blame the agencies. Not, I'm not suggesting that the agencies are pure as the driven snow, but I'm just saying, what is wrong with our focus here?
I think you've hit the nail exactly on the head here, which is, and by the way, I should say that nobody, despite the fact that this Operation Minaret and its companion program, Operation Shamrock, were completely illegal from beginning to end. I mean, NSA was authorized to do this by somebody or some people. And yet, despite the illegality of the operation, nobody went to jail. Nobody was held accountable. We held hearings, and everybody admitted that this was not the right thing to have done. NSA promised that it would never happen again, and went about its business. And right after the 9/11 terrorist attacks, NSA started the program all over again in secret, and this time. They went around the checks and balances that had been put in place after the Church Committee hearings, after the revelation about Operation Minaret. And the men, by the way, the two men most responsible, former Vice President Dick Cheney and Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld, were there in 1975. Both were working in the White House under President Gerald Ford, and it was their job to clean up the mess. So that the lesson they learned from the disclosures in 1975 about Operation Minaret was how to go around the system the next time they had to do it. And the debate we're having is ludicrous. And I should also add that those people who blame the agency, meaning the National Security Agency and the rest of the intelligence community, these are not rogue elephants. I mean, it may be very politic to blame them, but somebody ordered them to do these things. Somebody authorized it, and then somebody said, well, let's take a look at what the rules permit us to do, and then he went out and did it.
Well, one of the things Matthew Ade, again, a leading intelligence historian expert on the NSA, who through the National Security Archives has managed to get these declassified reports from the NSA about their spying on American citizens, including two United States senators. He has an article of Foreign Policy with William Burr, Secret Cold War Documents Reveal NSA Spied on Senators. I've been told, and I've never been able to pin this down, that during the Bush administration, and you mentioned Dick Cheney and Don Rumsfeld, who pretty much tag-teamed and ran that administration. I mean, Bush to this day, George W. Bush to this day, does not speak with Dick Cheney because he finally realized how much his own presidency had been usurped by his vice president. And there were rumors at one point that Karl Rove was getting information, wiretaps on political rivals from the NSA, which Cheney and Rumsfeld presumably would have authorized. Will we ever find out whether there's any truth to that?
I can only say, I don't have any present knowledge of that. I'm hoping that sooner or later, sooner preferably rather than later, you know, we find out who actually did get their phones tapped, especially during that period from 2001 to 2004, when the NSA domestic eavesdropping program was run without referral to the FISA court, which is the court in America which is supposed to authorize the NSA and the FBI to conduct these sorts of wiretaps. And what bothers me is this is all being kept very, very secret, and I suspect strongly that when NSA or the U.S. government finally does declassify this information, we're going to be shocked, nay, perhaps even horrified at when we see the names of the people who did get watched by NSA here in the United States. And again, somebody will have put their names on a list and sent it off to NSA, and we'll never know who those people are. They're all anonymous. They're all shadowy. But yeah, I mean, this is one of the things that bothers me the most about whenever we have these aperiodic domestic, spying scandals, is who did what to whom and why, and that we don't know. And it bothers me also that the current occupant of the White House, President Barack Obama, being a constitutional lawyer by training, did not authorize sort of a truth commission after he took office in 2009 to find out, what had actually occurred during the previous administration.
But isn't it reasonable, Matthew A., to assume that if President Johnson and President Nixon use the NSA to target people that were their political enemies or people that they were concerned about, and in this case, two very prominent senators, one Democrat and one Republican, it just seems so logical to me that when you've got a person like Dick Cheney and an operative like Karl Rove in higher positions at the White House, they have that same kind of paranoid worldview. In fact, I don't know whether you read the book about Cheney by Ron Susskind. It's called The 1% Doctrine.
Yes.
Where Cheney's whole worldview was that, even if there's a 1% chance of a terrorist getting through, we've got to slash and burn and take no prisoners. So I'm just saying that it just, to me, it seems like not such a huge stretch to assume that if this stuff went on in the past, then it's gone on in the, not so much the present, but certainly in the recent times.
I mean, I think we'd be naive to believe otherwise. I mean, I'd be lying to you if I told you I did not share that same concern. And, unfortunately, we're up against a wall here in the sense that, getting information out of our intelligence community and our government about, what's been done in the way of domestic surveillance. And let's face it, I mean, NSA is not alone in this. The Federal Bureau of Investigation probably has a larger domestic eavesdropping program than NSA does, and will, it will take probably an act of God or something close to it to get the FBI to reveal, whose phones they tapped and which intermail circuits got listened to. Getting the government to declassify this information, the only way it ever happens is, when a scandal erupts. And to that sense, Edward Snowden has been a godsend, not because I agree with what he did, but rather he's actually, we can now talk about these things openly and ask these questions, and sometimes we get some answers. The answers we've been getting recently from the government, frankly, a lot of people don't like.
Well, just in closing, Matthew Aid, given the close vote in the Congress after these revelations came through from Edward Snowden on the PRISM program, and also there were polls at the time that indicated that a huge sea change in the American people, from a majority wanting the NSA to do more in terms of intruding on our civil liberties to stop terrorists, and the public did an about-face and now feel, since the Snowden revelations, that the government's gone too far. And we know the vote was very close. So we know that public pressure does have an effect here. Do you think these revelations that you've just come out with will add to that? I mean, it seems to me that, you know, in this long struggle between liberty and security, at this point, security has the upper hand.
Yeah, President Obama, I think, said it right when he said, you know, the hardest part of those in charge in the White House is trying to strike that balance between the need for secrecy and the inherent conflict with, you know, living in a democratic society of, you know, transparency and openness. And I know for a fact that right now, you know, the balance is beginning, as you suggest, to tip back in the direction of more transparency and openness. But it took, you know, the massive leaking of classified information by a former NSA contractor to achieve that. I don't know what, if any, impact the story that Bill Burr and I wrote will have on that. I know that right now, even as we speak, the Senate Intelligence Committee is holding a hearing up on Capitol Hill to examine the possibility of restricting, you know, imposing heightened restrictions on the National Security Agency in terms of who and who it can listen to and why, which is, I mean, it's a direct outcome of everything that we've been through over the last 3 months since the first leaks from Edward Snowden appeared. And, you know, it's one of those cases where we just don't know, you know, where all this is going to end up or what impact this is all going to have. You know, the only thing I can say is that, you know, I can see the analogies between Operation Minaret in the 1960s and 1970s and the crisis that we find ourselves in today. And hopefully when this is all over, and hopefully it will be over, we'll have restored at least a semblance of honesty and transparency in the intelligence business in the United States again.
Well, thank you so much for joining us here today, Matthew Ade.
Thank you very much for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Matthew Ade, who's a leading intelligence historian, expert on the NSA, and a regular commentator on intelligence matters. He is the author of Intel Wars, The Secret History of the Fight Against Terror, and The Secret Sentry, The Definitive History of the National Security Agency. He has an article at Foreign Policy with William Burr, Secret Cold War Documents Reveal NSA Spied on Senators. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon and assistant producer Colin Black. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.